Hi, I'm Debbie Williams. I am the Director of Marketing of Hyperlocology. We are excited to have Raj Bhatt, the President and Co-Founder of Whoops, Macarons and Gifting here with us today. MSG and I are thrilled to have a conversation with him to talk about all things delicious macarons and gifting and talk about local marketing. Raj, would you introduce yourself to us today?
Thank you very much. Super excited to be here, as Debbie said. I'm one of the co-founders and president of Whoops, Macaron, and Gifting. We've grown this company since 2012, and you know, who would have thought we've been able to grow a small little macaron company into something a lot bigger and creating happiness for a lot of people when we're gifting and sharing a beautiful product. So very excited to be here.
Awesome, thanks. All right, MSG is going to kick us off with some fun little break the ice questions. Take it away, MSG.
Break the ice questions? You mean the ones we did a long time ago?
Oh, no, none today? That's okay.
I'm going to jump right into the conversation. Here
Great,
you go.
Great, let's do it.
Okay, so Raj, we were talking before. You said you're a foodie and a side gig chef. What does that mean? And what are you making tonight for dinner for your family? Assuming with your family up in Canada up there.
So always a foodie. I kind of grew up and I love trying world cuisines, and I've always been that tinker. I see food as art, and there is a very creative aspect to it, and it's absolutely science-based, so it kind of brings two of my loves together. And I started tinkering when I was young and just always trying to figure stuff out. So definitely as a foodie, I'm always constantly thinking of the next meal, where am I going to eat or what am I making, and always need something different. So tonight,
what are you making tonight?
Tonight, surprisingly, so I'm plant-based, so we're going to be making a chimichangas with a Oaxacan mole sauce. And for dessert, I've got a sweet potato Belgian chocolate mousse with coconut cream on top.
So I've evolved my cooking. I get all my recipes now from TikTok.
Perfect.
and I love it.
And it's surprisingly great.
I like the video aspect. You have to look at, follow along. It's just, to me, it's so simple, and I'm trying new things. And I don't do the science. I do the art, but I just sort of put stuff together, and I'm having so much fun doing it.
Awesome. Awesome.
Okay. So you're in Canada now, correct?
I am currently based out of Calgary.
And how'd you get to Canada?
So I was born and raised here. I'm a Canuck through and through, but was living in the U.S. for 20 years from 2001, or now 21 years. And so our office is still based in New York, and our entire team is worldwide, but largely New York based. But right now, I'm managing the franchise side of things here in Calgary. My family's here, and this is still home. So can't take a Canuck away from Canada.
And you also said that you're an entrepreneur. I thought your family was it. You're a family of entrepreneurs. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Because I'm like a simple, boring work for the company person. When I meet entrepreneurs, I'm always blown away.
Sure. My father owns our family owns a metal finishing business. I kind of grew up in that. And then we started buying small little businesses, more in the retail franchise space. So my entire extended family and friend circle here in Calgary, and actually throughout the US, are almost all entrepreneurs. Either they own, a bunch of pizza shops and other food franchises or service franchises. And I don't know if it's in the blood or it's just something that I kind of grew up with, and it feels natural to me. So working when I was in finance and private equity, it was great, but it was tough working in a structured environment, and being an entrepreneur, having multiple things to do is great. But I've got a couple of clusters of daycares here in Calgary. I've invested in gym companies, other franchises. So that's my background.
Is it Orange Fitness, perhaps? Orange Theory?
No, I was a franchisee of Planet Fitness. Bringing that up to here in Canada.
My daughter worked at Planet Fitness, and I went to Orange Theory on Monday. Absolutely loved it.
It's amazing.
I love the Orange Theory on the treadmill. I'm walking, people on either side to me are running at 9 miles an hour. And all of a sudden I went from walking to a jogging. I'm like, this is unbelievable.
How many, what are those points called? Slap points?
Oh, I don't even know. Oh, yeah. Not as much as the people on either side of me, but more than I thought I would do. Okay. Right. I got to jump. My favorite story you told me when we were talking the other day was how this business has been 10 years in the making and you started in New York City at the kiosk in Bryant Park. Can you tell us that story? Because that just blew me away how amazing that is that you pulled that off.
Sure. So myself and my partners, we were involved in a franchise called Aroma Espresso Bar. So it's an Israeli cafe chain that had a nice presence in New York. And, you know, because we were in that space, in that food space and in New York, we were looking at different pastries from around the world. And we were all, you know, just as entrepreneurs and just curious minds, we were always looking for opportunities. And one thing that we noticed that every year at Bryant Park, the holiday shops at Bryant Park, it was 9 weeks of intense amount of people coming in, buying a lot of stuff. And one thing we noticed that what was trending at that time was macaroons.
And this was 2012. This was 10 years ago.
So we were looking at it in 2011. Okay. That's when we kind of noticed. And we said, you know what? You see donuts, you see cronuts, you see whatever, you know, waffles. But there was one thing that was trending that wasn't represented was French macaron. And being the foodie that, I mean, our team entirely is, and we had the ability to make French macaroons. We said, you know what, let's try it. And we applied. And so it's a rigorous process, but we got in for 2012 and we started, you know, I think it was end of October, 2012, and it runs for 9 weeks. We started the company as macaroons and cookies, you know, just French macaron, beautiful, as many flavors as we can get, you know, a nice rainbow smorgasbord of macaroons and, you know, nice big cookies. That was the kind of concept, a 10 by 10 little kiosk. And in 9 weeks, we did just over $250,000 of sales. We were blown away, you know, an investment that was like around $40,000, you know, high rent and whatnot. We're like, oh my God, we're just going to get hosed. But man, it was a fantastic experience. And
okay, so I was doing the math, 9 weeks, 63 days, 250,000. That's like $4,000 a day.
On average, yes. But
did that just blow you away?
You know, at first, the first few weeks, it was $2,000-$3,000 a day. And then when it ramps up, it was at some point $12,000-$15,000 a day.
And then you knew you had something once you experienced that, right?
Exactly. And that's really where our name comes from. Whoops, we had a business. And so we're like, you know, that's a random name. We made $250,000. Let's go with Whoops. It was a mistake. It was a absolute test and kind of a little side hobby gig. And all of a sudden malls and people were starting to approach us saying, hey, you've got a nice little concept, 10 by 10 or something smaller. Why don't you replicate it in other high traffic locations? And whoops, we had a business.
And your partners, what were they doing? Was a couple of you? It was like three of you over there?
So it was actually four of us. Okay. So we've got a husband and wife, Gil and Tal. Gil was the CEO of Aroma Espresso Bar, the franchise. And underneath him as franchisees, it was myself owning a location in New Jersey and Gal, who was owning two locations in New York City. And we were just great friends and we were scouting side opportunities.
Always looking for the side hustle. Can you talk to my kids and try to teach them the side hustle if they don't have in them yet?
Absolutely. It's going to garage sales every weekend and just trying to find a hustle. And that's how you learn. That's how I learned.
Okay. So from there, you then, what'd you do from there? Like, so you had the business, you had a great 9 weeks, you want to do something else. Like, what do you do after that? Like, what was your next step?
So first it's like, whoa, what just happened? And let's get some rest because we just got decimated just because it's really, really busy. And more importantly, to create product when you don't know what the demand's going to be. So you're kind of catching up. So beyond that, it was, you know, it took about, once we realized the potential and we had interest from mall companies in the area, if anyone knows the New York City metro area, New Jersey is kind of the mecca for malls.
And did you go to Short Hills?
We went to Short Hills, yeah.
There you go, that's the mecca.
Exactly, that's the luxury mall for sure in the Northeast. And we went to Garden State Plaza and we tried two concepts. They reached out to us and said, hey, why don't you take an inline space? So we took a nice little, I think 300 square foot inline space in Short Hills. And we took a couple of kiosks, actually not kiosks, carts within Garden State Plaza Mall. And we were like, let's try these two models, one being a little semi-permanent, the other one being in a nice cart in the middle of the mall. And, you know, this was 3-4 months in. So this was around April, May, 2013. And at that point, we're like, okay, there's Walt Whitman Mall, there's Roosevelt Field. And we just started expanding because
there must be what, 50 malls in the New York metropolitan area, I assume, whatever the number is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we started expanding. And by the end of the year, we were at, I think, 13 locations in the greater New York area, in the tri-state area. And it was busy. So it was hiring people we knew, people who used to work for Aroma, just, you know, lots of different people. And at that point, I had sold my Aroma. So, you know, avoiding the conflict of interest. And then saw this business and started, Tal and myself started growing, and it was great. And it was just learning every day in entrepreneurship, you get the basics, but how do you learn the product? How do you learn the marketing? How do you learn the customer demand and the sell through? And that's always new and fresh. And so you got to constantly be tweaking that. And that's what we were.
And your price points were a little more expensive, sold in a package typically instead of one. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So there's a couple of battles with French macarons. It's a product that's largely based out of Paris. So people traveling to Paris, you know, you go on the Champs-Élysées, you're definitely, you know, getting different products and you're going to all these macaroon houses. It's a beautiful experience. But it was starting to be translated in kind of big cities in US, New York, LA, Miami, for example. But as soon as you get out of Manhattan and you kind of go to Long Island or middle of New Jersey, it's hard to explain what these colorful things are. Some people thought it was soap. Some people thought it was a colorful Oreo, a cookie. And it's hard to explain. The French macaron is not a cookie. It's actually a pastry. And when you're paying roughly $3 a pastry.
A small little piece.
You're like, what the heck is this, right? But then you have to explain that this is an experience like wine, right? You can get a Trader Joe's $2 wine, or now it's $3, or you can pay for a $30 bottle and get a better experience. And the French macaron is almond flour-based pastry with Belgian chocolate ganache. I mean, that we do it with chocolate ganache. And so it's a beautiful experience. And how do you explain it to someone to buy not only one, but really a gifting experience? So you try different flavors. And, you know, we've always had 16 to 20 different flavors. And it's important to try as many so you get a little bit of tartness. You might get some creaminess, some earthiness, just like in wine. But in macaroons, there is a different flavor profile. So,
and it to me always felt like it's better for a group experience versus just by yourself. Like, you do that with the group, and it's so enjoyable. The different flavors, you have half, I have half.
Absolutely. I mean, that's definitely an experience. Or honestly, like, you know, Friday night, you've had a rough week. You want to treat yourself. Yeah, you know, go through 6 or 12, and while you're watching a movie or turn on some music and some nice wine or champagne. It's me time. So it's definitely a celebration with other people, for someone, or even for yourself. And that's the experience that we are targeting. That's what excites us on a day-to-day basis, creating celebrations with others.
Yeah. So then you went from Bryant Park to 8, 9, 10 in the New York metropolitan area. And I think at one point you said you got up to 50 different stores and franchise.
Correct.
Can you talk about that, how that happened, and then what happened when COVID hit?
Yeah. So in entrepreneurship, I mean, the game is scaling. How do you scale a business? I mean, you can stay small and just kind of play off the cash flow, but this was a business opportunity where one, as I said, French macaroons were still foreign within the US and it was trending. So how do we get Whoops across multiple locations, multiple regions? So as a business, you really have two options. You know, how do you grow? One, you're making a lot of money, so you can use that profit and reinvest. But then you need to have the infrastructure of people, know-how, and a geographic, you know, kind of expanse. And so that's one way of growing, but that is capital intensive, your own capital. Or you have another option. If you have a business model that works, which means it is profitable, and if someone did that at a unit level, and they're profitable, maybe, I mean, you can grow through partnerships, which again, you still own and you got to give capital, or there's a franchise model where
you- And you came from the franchise world talking about earlier, so you sort of knew that model.
Exactly. So I've invested in franchises prior to Aroma. I became a franchisee. So I saw that, but I was never a franchisor. So we're like, you know what? We have a nice, easy model. All you have to do is sell macaroons and make it look pretty and be ready to service businesses and people and gifting. And we said, you know what? It's not that relatively not that expensive to open up a 45 square foot cart or kiosk in malls. There was a demand and we can go nationwide and the franchisee doesn't have to make the product. We make the product either in New York or Europe now. I can explain that in a bit, but it was coming to them. It was a fresh product once it was kind of presented, and it's a beautiful experience and it's just an easy model. So we said, let's go the franchising route. So from 2013, actually we started franchising 2014, up until right before COVID, we had hit 50 locations and we were nationwide, and we are nationwide all the way from LA to Idaho, and everything in between all the way to New York. But COVID happened. And unfortunately, we were in high traffic locations, which means because of COVID, us being also in malls were shut down. Anything with, you know, lots of public was shut down. And unfortunately, unlike restaurants and other retail, you know, strip center retail, we didn't have access to the public. And that shut us down for a while. And unfortunately, some franchisees didn't know where this was going. So they said, you know what, I'd rather shut down. And we said, no problem. So we went down to just under 30 locations. But after COVID, we really doubled down on our messaging. We had other products, but we focused on our core business, which were French macaron. And we said, the one thing that we were missing was local marketing. Even though as franchising, we didn't have a concerted effort together. Franchises were doing their own thing. And when you know, when everyone's doing their own disjointed thing, there isn't that common communication.
Yeah, that always makes me nervous having 50 people doing 50 separate things out there in the marketplace.
Exactly. And so we were not reinventing ourselves, we were rebuilding the business. And we said, local marketing, spending money on marketing as primary and getting that word out again is going to be very, very important, especially through COVID. And that's when we started talking to you, to Hyperlocology, knowing that we needed a joint effort to attack local marketing. And we started growing out of it.
And with local marketing, you know, what was the franchise's instructions? Like, was it a certain radius they did? Like, how'd that all work? And you also can ship nationwide, right?
Correct.
So how does that work with the franchisees and the shipping nationwide? That was always interesting to me. I didn't talk about that before. That's fascinating.
Yeah. So we have three sides to our business. We have the manufacturing or the distribution of the French macaroon. So that's one sister company. We have the franchise company. And then we have e-commerce and more like a corporate level business. Now, to get the word out, we said, okay, we're going to have to take a two-pronged approach. One, invest in e-commerce a little bit more heavily. So at least we can, if someone is in a location like Montana where we don't have a location, we can ship out 2 days and fulfill from New York. And so that's the beauty of the product. We have great packaging. We can put ice on it and get it to someone. But our main focus is franchising. That local aspect of an experience. You know, yes, you can see macaroons on a screen, and that's great, but to
I want that instantaneous gratification of going to the store and then going home and having a nice celebration with you know, family and friends and eating them.
Absolutely. And you know, there's a lot of gifting options out there, whether it's fruit baskets or cupcakes or bundt cakes, whatever it is. But we want a part of that share, and it's important to have that local presence. So we're definitely invested in franchising, but as we were rebuilding, what happens in franchising is you have really two streams of income that you can use at the corporate, I mean, at the franchisor level, and it's local marketing funds or a brand fund. So we were taking a 2% brand fund, but that brand fund goes to developing assets and the e-commerce, so it actually burns up. And when you have zero income at the franchise level, because all the malls were shut, that means you have zero royalties, and hence the franchise business dries up. So what we did was we said, okay, this is an opportunity to, and we were asking franchisees to go find their own little marketing companies, whether it's local, there's franchise-based companies where they take a management fee and they have software and they kind of do what Hyperlocology does, but each one would be individual. We said, guys, we need to gather and we need to now charge another 2%, but we will control your 2% and we'll do it together. And it took about a year to build up enough funds to have a kitty to then say, hey, Hyperlocology, we're ready for you. We've got the funds, let's lay out a budget and let's do a concerted effort for the franchisees as a baseline.
So you're a combination of local and national, but you want them all to work together in one cohesive strategy instead of 50 all over the place.
Exactly. Exactly. And that way we're targeted. I mean, it's for the benefit of local. That's the whole reason why we got Hyperlocology is local, local, local. But it's a consistent message that the franchisees have a flow and, you know, they're busy with their own things. And to give them Facebook advertising or Google marketing, and that's not their wheelhouse. Their wheelhouse is selling macaroons and providing that service. We're trying to make it as easy for them as possible and doing it ourselves with their money only focused on them. We're not taking a cut on that or anything like that. But it was very, very, but there's a trust factor that we need to develop. And franchisees need to see where their money is being spent. And there's no kind of, you know, little percentage going to franchise. We want to say you're giving us this and you're spending this, and dashboard and reporting was key. No one had it except for Hyperlocology, and that
and, was and the relationship between the franchisee and the parent company or whatever I'm saying. Like, it's amazing how that has to be so symbiotic to work properly, and the trust must be unbelievable.
I mean, it gets, you know, I hate using this analogy because franchisees don't like it, and I get it, but it's like a parent and a teenager.
Yes. Clean your room. Clean your room. Yeah.
So the franchisor as a parent has that experience and the broader view of the household. The teenager is really focused in their own life, and they don't see the broader picture. So sometimes because without that experience, they feel like everything's against them sometimes. And so it's important to kind of keep the household together and communicate and listen, but because that teenager or the franchisee, truly has their own experience and whatever they're facing, but they might not see the bigger picture. And so there is friction, but over time it is a happy family, and or that's what we're trying to do. And there has to be trust both ways.
Can you talk a little bit about how the macaroons are so crazy hard to make and so time consuming? Because I did not realize that.
Absolutely.
Like you said, you make them, you used to make them in New York, and now you're actually making them in Belgium, I believe.
Exactly. So French macaroons, I would say why you don't see so many of them, like they're not everywhere in a sense, is because they're extremely hard to make. They're probably, you know, you look at MasterChef or any of these cooking shows or the great English baking, whatever, the baking shows. It's like one of those, if you know how to make a macaroon, you can probably master everything else. Cupcakes are easy, cake is easy because it's so precise. French macaroons, it's an art based on science. And it's a process that actually takes 24 hours. So making it, there's different steps. Humidity is a factor, heat is a factor, the right conditions. If you over whip by maybe one or two turns, it'll go flat. If you under whip, it might, you know, go crazy. And with the macaroons having to look so pretty, there's really no room for error. With cupcakes, you can cut off the top and, you know, add a little bit more of a swirl with icing and you mask it all really quickly. French macaroons, you don't have that. And because it's so dainty, so hard to make, that's why the price is higher. But it is the queen or princess of pastries. Now, once you kind of get it as a hobby business, you can do it. But to scale up is a whole different game. And there's not that many people that could do it. We were doing it in New York. But what we realized was, in order for us to be even that much better, at Whoops, we're really focused on the gifting side of things. We want people to have an experience. It's a you know, you can get macaroons at Costco. Heck, you can go to TC Maxx and get really nasty old ones. So you can get them. But if you really want that experience, like wine, you got to up the level. And we found a, to be able to provide consistency, we found a manufacturer in, a partner actually in Belgium, and we wanted free range eggs, higher quality cream. You know, Europe has just that much higher food standards.
Yes.
And if we're getting Belgian chocolate, let's just be where the source is. So we said, let's be closer to the source. The French macaron has to go through a maturation process, which is 24 hours, 48 hours, where the ganache or the cream has to kind of create a little bit of osmosis with the shells, the almond flour shells. And we can stop the process, freeze it, and move it around, you know, in the one time. And
that's why they're always so fresh when you get them, even though they were made however long ago.
Exactly. Exactly. And so that's the beauty of the product. And it allows us to have that authentic experience, fresh, locally, and it doesn't have to be made there. That's at least the beauty of the product. It doesn't work with cake and some other things, but surprisingly it works with French macaron. So number one, it's super hard to scale. Number two, it's hard to get that access. And, you know, it's just super hard to make locally. So might as well, let's bring the best to Americans and give them the experience that they deserve.
Are the ones at Costco any good?
I mean, they're good in a way.
Okay.
It's like a car or a wine, you know, you can have a $5 wine and, you know, as the third, fourth bottle, it's not bad, you know, as your first primary bottle. It's your only experience. I mean, we get a lot of people who are like, oh, I've tried them. They kind of suck. And, you know, I didn't have a great experience. And at that point, I'm like, just forget about everything. I want you to try this.
Once you try yours from Belgium with everything, you're blown away.
Yeah, they're like, oh, now I get it. And then they're converts. Or a lot of our customers are, you know, hobby pastry chefs at home, or, you know, bakers, home bakers, and they've tried to make French macaroons.
And they're like, I can't make this at home. This is unbelievable.
Yeah, and so then they fall in love with us. In fact, I just had a text last night from one of our franchisees who had she was in Knoxville, and Knoxville surprisingly has a lot of Food Network show filming there and whatnot. But someone who had studied in France and UK in Cordon Bleu school, and so she had our rose macaroon and she started crying. She's like, this is one of the best I've ever had. And she was a pastry chef. And so that just goes to show you that it's an experience. And at that
point, they know how hard it is to make it properly. That's why they're blown away.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. When we were talking previously, you mentioned something about the sales funnel, and I sort of wrote something down, but I got it wrong, like 100K to 20K to 100, whatever the numbers were. Can you just reference that again? I thought that was a fascinating conversation.
Yeah. I mean, in any business where you have sales, like a formal sales potential, whether it's selling franchises, which we do, we have our franchisees going out building their business and talking to local corporations. And we have our, at the Whoops corporate level, we have salespeople who are focused on B2B and corporate gifting and employee gifting. And in all these cases, in any sort of sales, it's all about the sales funnel. So you reach out to, I was just making some numbers up. Like, we might reach out to 1,000 people. Let's say in franchising, we reach out to 1,000 people. You know, 500 might show interest, but 100 really show interest. But that interest is, okay, let's start engaging. Then it kind of goes down to 50 who want to move forward to the next step. And then really at the end of the table, there might be just 10 people who are ready to sign or close the deal or want to get the French macaroon gifts. You know, after that, three or four might reorder. So knowing that there's a funnel, you can't just reach the first 1,000 and sit back. It's a you constantly need to add to the funnel to get to the bottom line. Now, in sales, you can always affect certain things. It might be your sales pitch, it might be your offering, it might be price, it might be kind of competitive benefits to widen things that fall to the bottom. But we're always thinking about from a funnel that you constantly need to feed that funnel to get sales at the end of the process.
Yeah, it's just marketing 101, but you say it so eloquently.
Thank you. Done it so many times, and it's like, it's actually pretty basic, but you have to really think that way. And then you realize if you have that extra moment, go make another sales call, go make a new connection. And that's what we teach our franchisees. It's important to grow their business that way, whether it's a physical connection or a digital connection, you know, reach out to someone on LinkedIn or go to a Facebook group and mention who you are and, you know, put a link and you're just reaching out to now 10,000 people all of a sudden, but you need to reach out to people.
Do you use a CRM for all this?
Yes, we do. We've used a few in the past. We've evaluated a lot, but you need a CRM to keep everything in line. Otherwise, I mean, the best sales you can have is re-hitting up your old customers
right.
and reminding them. That's, you know, your best ROI. Otherwise, you're kind of spinning your wheels on new customers all the time.
And do all your franchisees use the same software?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. We're using a company called Active CRM. It allows us to see our customers coming through different funnels, meaning if they came in through e-commerce or if they bought something at POS, we can track them through email. And at some point it'll get into loyalty that, hey, you're a brand ambassador of Whoops. You deserve some VIP or here's a new flavor. Here's a special thing that we want to give you. And it's all about customer retention and customer loyalty these days to have that competitive advantage.
And what KPIs do you look at the most for your business, whether it's, you know, when you wake up in the morning or go to bed at night?
Sure. It depends on the part of the business. So in the franchise, like selling franchises, we're looking at how many leads came in, how many people are in the pipeline, and how many...
Back to the funnel. Right.
That's the franchise sales funnel. In B2B corporate sales, we're, again, same thing. How many people have we reached out to? How many are in the funnel at different stages? And what is our close rate? At retail, it was actually during COVID that I stepped in to start leading retail. And I've always thought about running a business as an I love giving people experiences. It's funny you're talking about dinner tonight. I have some people coming over and I've got a 4-course meal. And for me, it's about that experience. You know, you can just heat some stuff up, but if you kind of take it step by step, that's what differentiates. And life is about experiences. So when it comes to French macaroons selling at retail, we want an experience rather than a commodity-based sale. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted a macaroon, I can give you a macaroon, but I'd rather have you have 3 macaroons so you can taste and realize what the experience is so you keep coming back. And so that was the thing I focused with our franchisees, saying, guys, we need to shift to an experience. Experience is luxury. Luxury is not a price point, but an experience. And so we want to shift more towards that because, as we said, French macaroons could be had at Costco. It could be anywhere, but we want to differentiate.
I don't get the experience of buying it at Costco, though. It's just buying that and my big chicken.
Exactly. Exactly. So that was a shift I did with franchisees that pushed the experience. We need to up our game, and we're continuing to do that. And that's how we grew out of COVID. Most of the franchisees saw. And so coming back to your question, what is the KPI? It's the average order value. We used to be roughly selling 3 macaroons on average to a person. Now we're consistently 6 to 12. And we're starting to shift towards more and more experience. And customers aren't running away at the price. They want that experience. Heck, millennials and Gen Zs, all want experiences. They prioritize experience over commodity-based type of stuff and volume.
Yeah, I know the lingo. It's AOV.
AOV.
Average order value.
Yeah.
Okay, I got one last question for you. Any advice out there? Because I could go on forever, but I think we have to wrap it up at some time. Any advice out there? Because I'm always fascinated by people who want to start a franchise. Where do they go? What do they do? I think at one point you say there's 1,500 potentials out there. Like, how do you sort of whittle down and start the conversation?
And just to clarify, someone starting as a franchisee, or someone wants to start a franchise as a franchisor?
Franchisee.
Okay. So a couple of
things. Like, I went to franchise.com at one point and I was looking for a friend. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God, there's so many.
Yes. Big topic that I love talking about. I'm a small business expert and a certified franchise expert, a CFE. So there's so many franchises out there, if you just think about the number of franchises, most people think about food and retail, right?
No, it's hotels, right?
Hotels, McDonald's, whatever, KFC, those are all franchises. But you also, people forget that there's franchises on the service side. You know, you could be an electrician, you could be a plumber, you could be a grass cutter, you could be a roofing specialist. And there's so many franchises out there, or you could be in education, you can own a urgent care. So the first thing I tell people is entrepreneurship is very, very tough. Owning a small business is really tough. The one thing about owning a business is in 5 years, there's a 90% chance that you're going to fail. Mm-hmm. Owning a small business. If you own a restaurant, I think it's like 95%. It's crazy. And within 10 years, most businesses fail. By going with a franchise, it allows you to mitigate that risk because you're taking a system that has largely proven itself. You want to make sure it has proven itself. And the franchisees are happy, they're profitable, and they're growing. Now, you can join any business, but my heartiest ask of any person out there, before you get a franchise, figure out what you love to do. It's only when you have a passion in what you're doing, you will be successful, because you're willing to give it 24/7 all day long and it doesn't feel like a chore. So you're gonna beat out the competition and you're gonna work your butt off.
Such a great point.
And so when you're there, then you realize, okay, so I was just talking to someone who is a teacher, and she's like, I'm entrepreneurial, but I don't know where to start. Should I get a pizza franchise? I'm like, why?
No, do something teacher related.
So I'm like, look at tutoring, look at daycares, look at something where you are taking your natural passion and you're creating that joy. And she's like, oh my God, I didn't think about tutoring or this and that. I'm like, yes. So now she's looking that way. So now, where do you find those? Well, number one, figure out the experience you've had with a brand. You can get franchise experts out there. Sometimes they're brokers or they're advisors, and they'll do the same thing. They'll try to figure out what works for you, and then figure out your lifestyle. Remember, if you're owning a restaurant, that means your evenings and weekends are done.
Yes. Right.
And so do you really want that for your lifestyle? And
No, I don't.
Yeah. When I had my Aroma Espresso Bar, I wanted this. Everyone wants to have their own coffee shop. So I wanted a coffee shop, but it turned out to be a full-blown restaurant. And my wife and I were tied up over the weekends, and I had two growing kids. There were 3 and 2, and we weren't seeing them anymore. And it was like, okay, this is not what we signed up for. So that was one of the transitions I made. But figure out your lifestyle. Are you up for that? Do you want work 9 to 5? So the biggest thing I can ask is figure out your lifestyle, what you want in life, figure out your passion, and then go find that franchise. And when you do that, you're now maximizing your success. And then do your diligence. Check out the legal stuff. Find a franchise lawyer to read the document. They'll help you. Get a franchise advisor and get a small business expert to guide you through this. Like a home, this is one of the most important investments. And in fact, you're putting your life savings and 401k and stuff into it. I've seen people go bankrupt and take this with a lot of seriousness, and not all businesses are successful. Try carefully, but be passionate.
Debbie, on that note, I'll throw it to you. Raj, absolutely fabulous conversation. Your entrepreneurship, everything you're doing, it just blows me away. Kudos. Debbie, all you.
Thanks. Thank you so much, Raj. Thanks as always, MSG. Fantastic conversation. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.